I see what y'all doing right.
It ain't nothing like we ain't nothing over here, you dig?
Everything flies, baby.
Huh? Hey, y'all. About to get real ugly, baby.
I tell her throw it in the bag, just like fast. Blueberry Kush, and we smoking on hash. Crossover sick, you know how I play your beat. Pockets eating good, they love fettuccine. This that new me, this that new we. She's never knocked up, she flirts all the seed. Styrofoam cup, filled to rock smoothie. J. Roger Rose got me Texas gleaming. And any given Sunday, man, I'm really beaming. Cheesing, no Kodak is out the frame. You in the past, all they saying is, what's his name? No peacemaker, that's my Judas job. Fly TV news, check out the blog. Shouts out to my homie Bob. We got some OGs. Call it bread farmer. Pure denim brandish and it breaks like a shooting star.
You so rock that polo, man, I rock that fly-ish. You so rock that Hugo, man, I rock that fly-ish. You so rock that hobo, man, I rock that fly-ish. Man, I rock that fly-ish. Man, I rock that fly-ish.
Yo, yo, yo. Yo, yo, yo. You are now tuned in to a very special episode of On Point with D-Stubbs. I'm your host, Damon D-Stubbs Stubblefield, and this show is brought to you in part by Flyish.com. Flyish.com is a clothing line, a blog, and, of course, they host our radio show every week. So make sure when you're in front of a computer, you tune in to www.flyish.com to get all of the exclusive new music news and things going on in your neighborhood. So, as I mentioned earlier, this is a very special episode of On Point with D-Stubbs Talk Radio because we'll be covering a subject that hits close to home in a lot of urban cities, but especially in Baltimore City. And what we're talking about tonight is rape. Tonight, this show is dedicated to women and men who have been affected directly or indirectly by rape. So remember that while we're on the show tonight, we're here to provide our listeners with info on how to be proactive against being raped. We're going to be providing a few statistics to consider. And most importantly, we're here to provide info on how to deal with life after being a victim of rape. So for everybody who's listening online, if you want to call in and voice your opinion or ask anyone questions on the air tonight, you can do so by dialing in to our listener call-in number, which is 646-200-0997. Once again, if you're listening online on flyish.com, you can call in by dialing 646-200-0997. So tonight's going to be a really, really good show. We actually have someone who's a professional and who deals with rape victims in Baltimore City quite often. Her name is Masine, and she's with an organization called Turnaround Inc. And Masine, I've got you on air right now. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your listening audience and you for taking on this particular topic. But I do have to say my name is Masine.
I'm sorry. Apologies. Masine. So everybody note that. Masine. So don't call up to their organization and ask for the wrong person to turn around. But so Masine, the reason I reached out to you is because I did a little bit of a research on statistics in Baltimore, and I found that based on a report published by the FBI every 6 months, there's actually been an increase in reported agitated rape in Baltimore City. And so if you can you tell us a little bit about your background with Turnaround Inc., how you got involved with the organization, and then we can get into the topic, you know, that we're talking about tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Turnaround is a community organization that's been working in Baltimore City and Baltimore County for just over 30 years, really working and created and put into existence to support the families, in particular the women and young ladies who are affected by sexual assault. And you're talking about being able to offer counseling, community education, training, shelter, things of that nature, the things that survivors and their families really need in order to move forward from that trauma. In terms of my involvement with Turnaround, I've been with Turnaround. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're fine. You're fine. So how long have you been with the organization?
Yes, I've been with Turnaround for almost 6 years, working as a community educator and coordinating the community education department over the course of the last year. And during that time, I actually got to Turnaround because I was a little bit of a stalker. I was stalking or really checking in on Turnaround's work because I thought that this particular topic is so vital. I'd worked with middle schoolers and youth for quite some time and had dealt with having to talk to a middle school girl who was a victim of molestation or sexual assault and, you know, not knowing exactly how to deal with that at that time, but doing the best that I could with that information. And so a few years later, if you fast forward about 3 or 4 years, I found out about Turnaround and was just kind of looking at their website. And then when I saw the opportunity present itself, I definitely made sure that I could be considered for an interview. So I was really excited and really passionate about this particular issue and this work and its relevance to healing women in our communities. And so that's how I got involved with Turnaround, how long I've been there.
Okay, so did you grow up in Baltimore, or were you are you a transplant? I know a lot of people, they transplant to Baltimore for work and things like that. And so did you actually grow up in Baltimore City?
I did not. I'm what you call a transplant. Came here for college at the illustrious Morgan State University and have stayed here ever since.
Oh, okay. Okay, shout out to Morgan HBCUs. I went to Howard, so, you know, we definitely have to shout out to HBCUs. All the time. But so let's get into this topic. Now, I mentioned earlier that I read a report, and for everybody listening right now who's not familiar with it, it's a report that the FBI publishes every 6 months, and it's called the Uniform Crime Report. So the report that I actually looked at last week was dealing with a time period of January to June in 2011. So it's kind of like a rolling report, and afterwards they publish it, you know, a couple months later because they need to validate all the data. And Baltimore is not heaven. Of course, there, you know, we all know that there are issues in all major cities. But what stuck out the most with me was when I looked down the rape column, the forced rape column, and it said that last year or the last period in 2010, there were 81 reported rapes. In 2011, the same period, there were more than double. There were 171 reported rapes. And that was something that was startling to me because I have two daughters. They don't live in Baltimore per se, but they do live in urban areas. And that was something that startled me. And I don't know, have you heard of anything about that? Or because I know that I spoke to someone else at another organization, and they said that this was an issue with reporting, and they were actually excited about the fact that more women were stepping up and actually reporting these things going on. So they didn't think that there was an actual increase in it, but they were saying that there's just an increase in reporting because women are getting more confident and more able to talk about these things. Do you have any information on that? Because that might be something that we want to, a myth that we want to dispel, you know, with our
listeners.
Well, yes,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And actually, let me give you a little bit of background on kind of what happened there. That person that you spoke with was right in one respect. It's really an issue of awareness. And what we mean by that is, unfortunately, the Baltimore City Police Department were not reporting the sexual assaults in the best way that they could, having thrown out or found or called or listed a sexual assault as unfounded. And in 2010, the Baltimore Sun did a huge, what we call an expose, if you will, on this particular issue of the fact that, you know, Baltimore City's sexual assaults had dropped so low, you know, as you saw there, I think it was probably about 81 or so that was reported to the FBI in that particular year. And it was like, excuse me, those of us who were doing this work knew that that just could not be possible. And the Baltimore Sun reporter, Justin Fenton, had gotten a hold of that information and just began doing some digging. And when he did that, he found that there was just really the – the sexual assaults and the rapes were not being categorized correctly. And so the Baltimore Police Department over the course of the last year has worked really hard partnering with Turnaround in order to reexamine a number of those cases over the course of the last year and taking a look at actually, you know, what happened in that case, why was the case, you know, put in the unfounded pile, or why wasn't that case ever followed up on for whatever reason, you know, why was it kind of dead in the water? And an awesome team of detectives kind of came to the work on that, and through that, now you see that change, if you will, in that statistic. So not only do you have more women coming forward and reporting about their assaults and reporting the crime, but you also have a police department here in Baltimore. The mayor got behind this project and said, you know, we need to really take a close look at this for us to be so far behind the national average. And, you know, you quoted it and said, you know, Baltimore isn't perfect, if you will, but that, you know, we know that there's definitely consistency around the sexual assaults occurring in our area, and that drop just could not be 100%. And so through that work, that's where you see a bit of that spike in our area, but that is being directed correctly now, and women are reporting.
Got it. Okay. So there wasn't an actual spike per se. There was just a lapse in the data per se.
Right. Being categorized. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. But it still stands that there are a lot more on average than the rest of the country. So, you know, it still is something that we definitely want to talk about, but that does make me feel a lot better. That does make me feel a lot better that, you know, there isn't really a spike per se in the amount of occurrences going on in Baltimore, because that was just startling. So I'm glad we could clarify that. But for everybody else out there who has been going through this, you know, there are a lot of questions out there, and we have people actually chime in on Twitter and send me emails and things like that. So for everybody who's listening out there right now, everyone who sent me questions about this topic, you know, I know a lot of them may not want to call in. They're bashful. I actually did have another I had someone else who I was going to bring on the show, and she didn't want to be a part of it because it hit so close to home to her that she didn't want to break down on the show. She knows who she is, so shout out to her. She knows who she is if she's listening. But so we really want to help a lot of these young women know about what's going on, how they can get help, and how they can avoid it. And I know one of the most common questions that I received is how do these forced rapes occur? Is it something that women can do to avoid it by judging the people that they're around? Does it usually happen with strangers, or does it happen with people they know? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about the common ways that these things happen?
I'd be happy to. I think what we first have to do is really start by understanding a little bit more about rape culture and defining what sexual assault actually is. And so while many of us know and understand that rape is bad, you know, there are other pieces to sexual assault and sexual violence that isn't the blatant in-your-face sexual violation, such as a, you know, vaginal penetration or anal penetration or something like that, but rather that there is an issue around rape culture that kind of fosters the vulnerability of women and girls around this issue. But let's start by defining what sexual assault is. And we define it as unwanted sexual contact. And in particular, in the state of Maryland, it is defined as the perpetrator using force or the threat of force, or when the victim is incapable of giving consent. Okay, so you're talking about force or the threat of force. That becomes really important to define, because what you're seeing is that it kind of highlights and dispels some of the myths surrounding sexual violence and sexual assault in particular. One, that it doesn't have to involve a gun, it doesn't have to involve a knife or any other type of a weapon in that respect. In addition, it also helps us to understand that there doesn't need to be, you know, 10 people in a room. It can be two individuals where one person has garnered some type of power and control over the other, enforcing an unwanted sexual act. And then, so you're talking about when a victim is incapable of giving consent to sexual activity. You know, in the state of Maryland, in particular, one of the number one things that will render someone incapable of giving consent to sexual activity is age. Okay? And so you're talking about age. You're talking about legal. Exactly. You're talking about the legal age to consent to sexual activity, which in the state of Maryland, teenagers don't get super happy about this, okay? But in the state of Maryland, that age is 16. So 16 is the age to consent to sexual activity in the state of Maryland, What does that mean?
Wow. So you're saying that a adult could actually could technically have a sexual relationship with someone who's 16 or older now. Is that something new that happened, or is that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. No, it's not new. It's just people don't quite see or understand that portion of the law. But, you know, kind of let me give you an example as well. So if a 15-year-old was dating or sexually active with a 19-year-old, that is what we consider illegal, okay? Because the 15-year-old is not of age to consent to to sexual activity, and the person that they're in a relationship with is 4 or more years older than them, okay? That's the other piece to this law. If the person is 4 or more years older, okay, or over the age of 21, and that person is not of legal age to consent, then you're looking at something that's illegal and what we call statutory rape. So you're looking at, again, that 15-year-old with a 19-year-old is illegal. Now, if that person was 16 and the person was 20, by the state of Maryland, at 16 you can agree or consent to sexual activity. Okay? Does it mean that people over the age of 16 are raped? Yes, it does. People over the age of 16 can be sexually assaulted. What you're talking about is consensual behavior, all right? And the state of Maryland begins at the age of 16, legally speaking.
So just to clarify, the consenting age has to be at least 16. So that basically eliminates everyone who's 15 or below. If an adult has a sexual relationship with someone who's 16 or who's younger than 16, they're automatically unable to consent, and so they're automatically in trouble, correct?
If you're defining an adult as anyone who's 4 or more years older than them, yes. For example, let's take a 15-year-old who's dating a 17-year-old. That's not 4 years or more. That's legal, but can a sexual assault still occur between those age ranges? Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. So outside of the legal definition of rape, which is what we're talking about right now, right? Is that
right.
The legal definition of rape? Okay. So is there a different definition of forced rape versus rape, or are they the same?
So what you're looking at in terms of the definition I just gave you, that's how we define sexual assault. Now, there's a lot of terms related to sexual assault, such as rape, okay, molestation, forced rape, so on. But then the law gives different caveats, if you will, and definitions attached that legally speaking, it could be tweaked. Now, if someone comes into turnaround and says they were sexually assaulted and in the course of their therapy or something like that, we're not going to say, oh, actually, what you just described was a first-degree sex offense. We don't care about that. We care about how can I help you? What is the next thing that I can do that's going to help you gain that sense of power and control over your life again? But when you talk about the legal definitions, yes, there's differences between, you know, a first-degree sex offense, a forcible rape, or a first-degree rape, or a second-degree rape, okay? The biggest one is in the state of Maryland, a first-degree rape, or what can be defined as a forcible rape, involves vaginal penetration, okay? So what you may have heard recently is that the FBI changed their definition of rape. At first, their definition of rape involved actually defining by stating female, okay, carnal knowledge of a female forcibly against her will. That was the biggest piece that for a long time was a bit of a challenge because that kind of excluded what population. If you're not female, then you're male.
A male.
Right? And that kind of said that males could not be raped. So by widening the definition, it allowed for more things, not just males being victims of sexual assault or rape, but also penetration that was anal, for example, or that involved the attacker being a female to another female. So it widened that definition. So now the FBI is using or has brought in their guidelines to define sexual assault or rape as a sexual now I'm drawing a blank on exactly how they start that off. But it kind of starts it by defining penetration no matter how slight, that's it, penetration no matter how slight of the vagina or anus with any body part or object or oral penetration by a sex organ of another person without the consent of the victim. You see how different that is and how it just broadens the scope of the different types of sexual assaults that actually occur, and
it
who
does.
That particular person could be.
It definitely does. And, you know, it's actually very interesting to talk about because, you know, you have certain men who may have had issues with that and what and weren't covered under the law. So I'm curious to find out how that may have happened with them and how that panned out, because I guess technically they weren't able to say they were raped by law because they didn't have the female body part, right? Is that right or am I wrong?
No, that's just about right. And kind of what would happen is that, you know, it may not be defined as rape, which sometimes for some survivors, it will make it seem like, you know, that takes away from the validation of the crime that was committed against them, you know, but it may be defined in the legal context as, you know, a sex offense, for example. And in the state of Maryland, what happens is like a first-degree rape and a first-degree sex offense actually carry the same penalty, okay? They're both felonies, and I'm thinking between a minimum of 10 to 30 years or so. I haven't taught that one in a while. Most people aren't interested in the legal nuances surrounding
this. Right.
But, the point is that it can carry up to the same maximum sentence, regardless of whether it was a first-degree rape or first-degree sex offense.
Okay, so for moving past the definition, for everybody out there listening, really good point. We've actually just discussed what rape is. So if you didn't know exactly how to define rape, it was it's actually a division of sexual assault, which deals with penetration of the vagina or anus with an object, pretty much in general, without the consent of the person who's being penetrated. So when that happens to someone, what are the next steps that you suggest they take? Because a lot of times, you know, I don't know a lot of times. You want to keep this as truthful as possible. How do most people react when that happens to them? How does that make them feel, and what is the thought process behind that? Because, you know, I know as a man, if something like that happened to me, I would feel extremely violated. I would feel alienated because, you know, my manhood was taken. So I know it's definitely bad for women, especially being, you know, a lot of times less, you know, powerful as men and things like that. So what's the process that someone undergoes or, you know, what's the best way to deal with something like that? Can you share a little bit about how to remedy that situation if you do feel like you've been raped? What do you see typically in the streets right now?
Okay. You asked a really great question earlier, too, about that ties right into the questions you just raised, and that is talking about who attackers are. And one of the biggest things to understand about this is that a rapist can be anyone. It can look like you. It could look like me. It could look like any of your listeners. Okay, just like a victim could be anyone. It could look like you, it could look like me, a victim could look like anyone. And in their fight to become survivors, part of the challenge is dealing with the individuals around them, family, friends even. Because often what you'll have is that although we have this concept and this thing about there being stranger assault and stranger rape, absolutely. Are women and men and often children sexually assaulted by someone they do not know? Yes. But the reality is, the overwhelming evidence and the reality is around what women tell us and what survivors just tell us, not just women but male and children, is that the person who attacked them was somebody that they know, somebody that they already trust. With children, you're talking about well over 90% of the time. And with adults, particularly adult women, you're talking about over 70% of the time. So you're talking about the fact that I've had my trust violated. I've had my boundaries just annihilated for someone who desired to have more power and control over me. And so what you're looking at here is that you've got to remember that piece of this, you know, in terms of just the reactions that people have and so on, is that often this is somebody that the person had already had a measure of trust in, okay? Maybe they were out on a date with them. Maybe the person just came in the house for a second, okay, because they're waiting for, you know, their best friend to arrive who happens to be related to the young lady or young man. Maybe it's somebody that they've known for the last 10, 15 years and has been a member or friend of the family, okay? You're talking about grandmas. You're talking, and I'm saying grandma, yes, literally, Nana, okay?
Grandma.
Yeah, you're talking about grandmas. You're talking about uncles. You're talking about aunties, all right? You're talking about mothers. You're talking about fathers. So when we talk about sexual assault, which, and I say in particular grandma and grandpa because you're talking about children who are victims of this as well, okay? And we may define it as child sexual abuse. All of it is under this umbrella of sexual violence. And you're talking about people trust, right? And so to get to your point about, you know, in next steps, any survivors that are out there listening and, you know, maybe it's getting a little difficult for you to finish hearing this, if you hear nothing else for the rest of this broadcast or remember anything else, we've got a lot of other good information to get to. But what I want you to remember, and I think what I can speak for, are you D-Stubs on the radio, D-Stubs?
I'm D-Stubs on the radio show, yes.
I haven't referred to you that yet. But what we want you to hear and remember is that, one, this is not your fault. I don't care what you were wearing, where you were going, how late it was, how you should have trusted your instincts, so on and so forth. It was not your fault. Okay? Two, there is life, a vibrant life that's available after your assault. Okay? Three, there are people out here who are ready and who are willing to help you. We want to help you. We want to put ourselves out of business because that means that we no longer have to have this fight and this push going to bring awareness to sexual violence, ideally because it's no longer happening. All right? If it was any other health medical disease, it would be considered an epidemic with the number of people who experience sexual violence within their lifetime. Okay? Before the age of 18, you're talking about 1 out of 5 boys and 1 out of 3 girls. I think the stat went up.
1 out of 3 girls?
1 out of 3 girls. Okay? Anytime I walk into a classroom and it's a classroom of 20 girls, 18 girls, 15 girls, I'm already running and knowing statistics in my mind. All right? That unfortunately I'm looking at, all right, even if there's mixing of boys. Remember, I said I 1 out of 5 boys. Okay? I think the stat just went up to like 1 out of 6. Okay? But you're talking about a vast majority, way more, because I know both of us know more than 3, 4, 5, 6 boys or girls. I'm sure your listening audience do as well. The vast majority, way too many of us, are going to meet, know, and love someone who's been a victim of sexual violence.
And, you know, let me chime in because, you know, this is something that I've dealt with a couple times. I mean, and you know, I never shared this with anybody before, but, you know, I've dated several women who have told me candidly, yes, I've been raped before. And it kind of startled me the first time. I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird, but okay. But then the second and third time, it started dawning on me that this may be something that just happens. This may be something that happens more often than people want to realize or even acknowledge, you know. And it's funny that you said that those statistics, 1 in every 3 girls, because I could honestly say that's right, based on the women that I know. 1 in 3 of them have said they've been raped before. And it was also shocking to me that a lot of them didn't seek help or didn't seek counsel for it. They just said, oh, it just happened. You know, and I questioned, I said, well, you know, why didn't you ask somebody, you know, or confront that person, and tell them how you felt about it, you know, because they were younger. One of the young ladies I'm talking about, she said it happened when she was younger, when she was in high school. And, you know, the person who did it to her is still a friend of the family, is married now, has kids, is living a normal life. And she knows of him. And, you know, he's still around. And she knows exactly what happened. She knows that he forced himself on her. And, you know, I asked her, why didn't you say anything to him? I mean, how does that make you feel? And she said, well, you know, it just happened, you know, and I don't really have any control over that. And, you know, it kind of hurt me hearing her say that, you know, being, you know, dating her at the time. And, you know, it just kind of sheds light onto my situation with that, with the statistics you just shared with us. So speaking of that, what are the long-term, for someone who may not reach out to your organization or, you know, seek help, are there any long-term effects about, you know, relative to relationships, health, or self-esteem that are associated with not speaking up and not seeking advice from someone like you on how to handle life after that happens?
Yeah, there's a lot of emotions and feelings that you can, you know, begin to empathize with survivors of having felt, you know, some of the comments that you made about how you would feel if it happened to you. You know, a lot of those same emotions and feelings are what survivors who are female may feel. You know, there's that sense of shame, that sense of guilt, that sense of embarrassment, you know. There's that sense of anger, okay. There's a sense of frustration and overall overwhelming pain. And so when you're talking about all of these feelings and emotions that someone can go through, and we're talking about all of those challenges that are presented with healing and surviving something like a sexual assault, right? People can go through any of those emotions at any time. And often survivors will feel at a spectrum, you know, 8 to 10 weeks after their assault, they may feel differently than, you know, within the first 24 hours after the assault, you know, within the first several years after the assault. But that surviving and healing looks different for everyone. Just like the reactions to being presented or accosted in that way and presented with this situation experience that you just can't believe it at the time that it's happening, that reaction is different for everyone who may experience it. You know, there's some commonalities, of course, surrounding this particular issue, but that every human being reacts to different to things differently. And so when you're talking about that, you know, if it happens when that person is a young, a child, for example, adult survivors of child abuse, especially child sexual abuse, have a range of feelings and emotions that some are similar to survivors who are assaulted as adults. But you have, you know, depression. Okay, you have an abuse of drugs or alcohol. You may have poor self-esteem. You may have that the person is dealing with poor boundaries, failure in relationships, lack of trust. You have that the person may be dealing with the pseudo-maturity or immaturity, you know, not quite acting their age. You may have that the person may have some anger related to what has still happened to them and lashing out that way. They may become hypervigilant even of their own children, especially when that child comes of the age that they were when their assault occurred. So there's a number of feelings and emotions and circumstances associated with this. This is a true health problem even, because if you think about this concept of depression, for example, okay, when people are depressed, they may not go to work. They don't function normally with friends or family. They may purchase some form of a pharmaceutical to kind of cope with what's happening with to them, what they're feeling at that time. And so there's a range of emotions related to this, as well as after effects from something like a sexual assault.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to this is a very, very powerful show. And for everybody who's listening on flyish.com, if you'd like to call us and ask Messina any questions, you can do so by calling in our listener hotline, which is 646-200-0997. Once again, that phone number is 646-200-0997. And if you're in our queue right now, we have listeners in the room right now listening to the show, and they've been listening the whole show. So we want to say thanks for tuning in, and this show is for you. If you would like to ask Messina any questions right now about that, about rape or about dealing with rape, you can press the number 1 on your keypad, and that will let you, that will put you in the queue. If we won't say your name on the air unless you want to say your name on the air, or we'll just identify you as the last 2 digits of your phone number, so you can talk to Messina candidly if you like, and we can, you know, start the dialogue and opening up the floor for everyone else who's listening to ask Messina any questions. Once again, if you're listening in the room right now, you can press the number 1 on your keypad, and we will let you speak on the air to Messina about rape and start the healing process if you need to be healed right now. So while the people in the room are deciding on speaking up, we do thank you for listening. Let's talk about the best way to assist a friend who's dealing with that. I mean, would the best approach for that be to just direct them to an organization like yours, Messina, or are there some things that a person who's listening could tell their friend who may be going through that, who may not have that level of trust where they want to share
what's going on with them with the third party, and they feel more comfortable talking to a friend. What are some things that friends can do when they have someone else they know who's going through an issue like this?
That's an excellent question, and you definitely there's some things that we can do as loved ones in supporting a survivor, and then, of course, referral. And what I mean by that is, yes, they can definitely give or receive our information. You know, we have a 24-hour hotline number that we provide to individuals. It's 410-828-6390. I'm sure we'll have a chance to roll that number back at the end of the show. But, again, that number is 410-828-6390 in case you're listening and you're feeling like you really need to talk to someone even now while the show is going on. That's an opportunity for you right there, and they will be able to support you and assist you. And then, you know, in terms of being supportive, yes, giving information like that or sharing information about turnaround is one way. But the biggest thing that is difficult, I think, for a lot of loved ones and family members and friends to do is to just listen. They just want you to listen sometimes, and they want you to believe. Yeah, they maybe should have stayed home. You know, maybe they shouldn't have been sneaking out at, you know, midnight and they were 15 years old. Okay. But since when has the punishment for a bad choice been something as violent and as vile as a sexual assault? When you're talking about the reality of what this crime does to individuals, I'm sure many of us have made bad decisions in our lives. You know, okay, yeah, maybe it wasn't an idea to drink to excess, okay, until you're throwing up. Yeah, maybe it wasn't a great idea to get in that car with that person you didn't know all that well in the name of meeting the hack, okay? However, something as vile as a sexual assault is certainly not punishment for anything. And so they want to be believed, they want to be believed, they want to be listened to, they want to be supported. As friends, we should also get support for our own feelings and emotions around that issue, okay? No, you can't ask 18 million questions. That doesn't help. I can't tell you how many times I've been in the room with survivors and their families, whether it's a hospital room or their home, and the person who is their loved one is just shooting all these questions at the survivor, you know, and relatively angry. And while they may not be angry at the survivor, it still feels like all of that hostility, all of that pain and that anger is directed towards me when I did nothing wrong. I didn't ask for this. It wasn't my fault. But I'm the one who's getting to deal with the brunt and the pain, dealing with police, dealing with lawyers, if the case has come to that, dealing with friends and loved ones who just look at you side-eyed like, I don't really know if I believe that story. Okay? So believing, right, supporting, just listening. Okay, being able to give them that resource and that information and realize that, no, they're not going to remember everything verbatim. Yes, they may be scared to go to the hospital right away and may want to go and make a police report 6 months down the line, a year down the line. That's normal. That's natural. It is okay. And if that's the situation that you're in and you want somebody to be supportive of you, Turnaround definitely has victim advocates who be willing to be that support system as well.
Okay, perfect. And everybody who's listening on flyish.com, we actually did put a link on the show description to their website, Turnaround Inc. So if you read the description, you can click on that link, and it will take you to Turnaround Inc.'s website, where they do have their hotline number, which we're going to share with you again before the end of the show. And they also have a lot of valuable information. They have a newsletter you can check out, and it's a really well put together site. So if you are wondering how to get to that, you can either click the link on our show page or assign it. What's the actual web address?
Turnaroundinc.org. That's turnaroundinc, and I'm saying C as in cat, .org.
Remember, it's .org, which is updated. Yeah, we update that. I had the producer say we updated that. No, it's definitely linked there. Okay, once again, anyone who wants to raise their hand, you can press number 1 on your keypad, and your hand will be raised, and we can get you up and close and personal with Messina.
and she can answer any questions that you may have. Don't feel any pressure. This is a tough topic, so if you don't want to raise your hand, that's fine as well. But if you do, then you can press 1 on your keypad. Likewise, everybody who's listening on the website and who wants to call in and ask a couple questions, you can do so by calling in 646-200-0997. And, Masan, I think right now we're going to get into a song just to kind of break it up a little bit while the listeners kind of absorb all the information we shared. And we'll be back in about we'll be back after this song. This is the We Found Love remix by Rihanna. You're on point with these stubs, FlyersTV.com.
You know I got love for you, see. What happened was, we in Bahamas, yep. I remember it was 08 summer. Some pretty eyed girl, nice to meet you, it's an honor. Yep, she tapped me, told me she Rihanna now. Y'all know my mind in the gutter, wanna hug her, wanna rub her, wanna touch her, gotta love her. That chain around my neck should have been her. And that's the truth, she'll tell you what the color was.
There were diamonds in the light. There were diamonds for the sky. Every shadow crosses mine. What it takes to fall alive.
Found us, the one that pulls her everywhere and all around us. I was hoping that it's something that it drowned us. Talking everything in motion till I time up. I can deal with your emotions by the pound, love. Set sail by the ocean, even crown ya. Plenty room for your love, and I got a spot for your love. Just took it right out the oven, knew she was hot, hot, hot. Damn, where the birthday girl at? Know she went to live. I was there, Jeroboam Magnum. 30 grand, like, get a DJ, a Magnum. Rock it up, strong gum, yeah, my click batter. Got the Gotti outside, so my chick batter. It's a party, then I'm rocking like a Mick Jagger. Got Play-Doh, so yup, me and Robin, we can play in Barbados. We seen a light shine in the MIAO.
Alright, welcome back. You are on point with D-Stubs. This is On Point with D-Stubs Talk Radio. We have a very special show tonight. We're dealing with the truth about rape, and we have a very special guest on the air right now, Ms. Messina from Turnaround Inc. Are you still there?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Perfect, perfect. And for all our listeners on the website, flyish.com, if you want to call in and you want to ask Masina any questions about issues dealing with rape, she's actually the community educator for her organization, Turnaround Inc., so she can give you all of the information you need right now on the air that she can provide you without, you know, asking anyone else. Of course, she's not going to tell you anything, you know, that she doesn't know. But she's very, very well-versed. We've had a great conversation today about rape, what the definition of rape is, how you can treat it, and what survivors can do to move forward in their lives. If you're listening on flyishtv.com or flyish.com, you can give us a call at 646-200-0997. Once again, that phone number is 646-200-0997. And raise your hand whenever you get in the queue by pressing number one, and we will let you on the air to speak to Masina. So while we were listening to that song, which was Found Love Remix by Rihanna featuring Flo Rida, we had a few tweets come in. So Masina, the first tweet we had says, "What is date rape?" And this person may not have been a part of the show earlier, so if you'd like, you can define that for them. This was a tweet by Anonymous. They said Anonymous, but they wanted to know, what is date rape? Can you define date rape?
Absolutely. Great question. Date rape is simply defined as the same as, you know, forcible rape or rape. It's just simply meant that this person was somebody you were dating or on a date with at the time that this all occurred. Some people think that date rape has to involve, you know, some type of drug or what was often referred to as date rape drugs. That's not the case, though, for that it's somebody you were, you know, dating or on a date with when the assault occurred. Great question.
Well, let's talk about that date rape drug, too. Now, that's Rufinol, correct? Is that what people typically use is Rufinol? And how often are you seeing people who've been victims of rape and drugs have been involved, like Rufinol or any other drug, for that matter?
Yes, that is the main, our most popular date rape drug, so to speak. But in many instances where any form of drugs or alcohol is used or involved, the victim is the one who's intoxicated, and the perpetrator, the rapist, the person who assaulted that individual is the one who got them drunk or got them high, so to speak. In addition to that, it's important to note that if someone is intoxicated, they cannot consent to sexual activity by law, and that is to help protect individuals from being victims of sexual assault. So when a person, you know, the part at the party, at the bar, what have you, actually, you know, is filling that person up with drinks and kind of, it's not even so much so about being able to slip anything in, but that person is more vulnerable at that time. And with instances like that, you're talking about the perpetrator who got the victim intoxicated.
Well, that's an excellent point. So, in essence, you can't, I mean, you know, I'm sure people have heard the song Blame It on Alcohol, but in law, you really can't blame it on alcohol, correct?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. We had another tweet that came in while we were listening to music. It said, what is the best way for a rape victim to overcome denial about being raped?
Excellent question. The first thing to say to someone who's a survivor of a sexual assault is that what you're feeling, what you're going through is normal. You know, the denial of the assault, wanting to get back to the life before the assault and the life that they perceived or that they had or what was going on in that life is very, very normal and happens to so many people. And so what I would say is that, you know, understanding your assault and understanding what happened and maybe some of the actions or the behaviors that you're experiencing and engaging in after your assault becomes really key. And what I find for survivors who've experienced sexual assault is that once they have had a chance to confront that issue and confront that trauma and that pain, they're able to step into a freer life and a life where they feel more in control around what happens to them. And, you know, they get a chance for some individuals who are survivors of multiple assaults, because that happens as well, where somebody may have been assaulted in childhood and then, you know, maybe again in college or even again as an adult, so to speak. But that the person may have experienced multiple assaults or multiple dangerous and unhealthy relationships. They've been abusive relationships that, you know, confronting that assault often gives the person the opportunity to kind of sift through some of that. However, it becomes really important to know that every survivor has to make that step when they are ready. And there's nothing that any of us can force on that individual, and nothing that any of us should try and force on that individual. Otherwise, you're reinforcing that concept of taking the pain, of taking their power away from them and exerting another sense of pain and control.
I see. So the best thing is to just let that person come to asking for help on their own, because you don't want them to feel uncomfortable about it, and, you know, they already feel like they've lost power in that situation, and you don't want to force them to feel like they've just totally lost power. So the best way is to listen to them, like we said earlier, and when they're ready to move forward, then help them and assist them in moving forward and contacting an organization like yours, correct?
Exactly. That's really well put.
Okay. Well, listen, Messina, we've got about 8 minutes left. We want to thank you sincerely from the bottom of our hearts for calling in, and it was last-minute call, but you stepped up to the plate and helped us out with this topic. Is there any information that you want to share with our audience before we let you go? And also remember that this is an on-demand show, so everybody who's listening now and who may have missed the show and tuning in later, or who want to share this show with all of their friends or whoever needs it, they're going to have access to this information too. So is there anything you want to leave us with before we let you go?
Sure. Again, I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody who's listening, everyone who's going to be willing to share this information, because all of that makes you an advocate. It makes you someone who commits to ending sexual violence in our communities, in our homes. The last thing I would like to do is I'd definitely like to repeat that contact information again, where they can get 24-hour assistance from our hotline. That number is 410-828-6390. Again, that's 410-828-6390. And if they want to make an appointment with Turnaround, if they're in the Baltimore area, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, our services are free. It's not going to cost you anything. They can just call our office at 410-377-8111. Again, that number to make an appointment, to get access to our shelter if you need it, and any other resources that are available. We work with women who are in the life or trying to leave the life, you know, survivors of trafficking, you know, or commonly referred to as prostitution. So we really are in the business of helping women and communities. And again, that number is 410-377-8111 in order to make an appointment. So thanks again. I really appreciate you.
Okay, no problem. And for everybody listening right now, that was Messina. So she can be, is it safe to say you can be a point of reference if someone just wants to talk to you directly from being on this show?
Absolutely. They can give the office a call and ask for me. If they want me to come out and speak to their faith-based organization, their groups, their school, I pretty much will go anywhere with somebody. Let me run my mouth for 15 minutes or more and share information about how it is that we can be active in ending sexual violence.
Perfect. Okay, perfect. Well, we want to thank you again for showing up on the show. This was a very powerful show. This is something that we want to do a lot more often. You know, this is about helping people in our community, especially in Baltimore. So if you are listening to this show right now and you thought it was helpful, please let 5 people know about what we're doing every Tuesday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. every single Tuesday. All of the topics may not necessarily be this serious. We do like to have fun, and we like to show the full spectrum of life on our show. But, you know, this is something that we needed to discuss because it is an issue in the streets right now. And, you know, we are about the streets and about uplifting urban culture and style. So that being said, if you have any questions for Messina, you can also reach out to us, and we can direct those questions to her through our contact link on flyish.com. And this show is going to be on indefinitely on flyish.com as well as Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, D. Stubbs. You've been on point with D. Stubbs, and thanks for tuning in. God bless.